sometimes we can get the impression that most of Jesus' ministry was about his contests with the Pharisees. Certainly we've seen enough of that in the previous few days. But that wasn't the main focus of his mission. He came to reveal the love of the Father and to reconcile us with the Father. He came to proclaim the kingdom and make it present among us. He came to reconnect us with himself, with God. So today's gospel is a little bit refreshing because it doesn't have anything to do with conflict with the Pharisees. It's more of an overview of what was going on and what was happening because of the success or the impact of his public ministry. And it says here, people were coming from all over the place. It mentions all these places which might not be so familiar to us, but it's regions all around what we would call the Holy Land. So from the southern area, Judea, Jerusalem, Galilee in the northern part, then Idumea, central, beyond the Jordan, meaning on the eastern side of the Jordan, then Tyre and Sidon, way to the north, up toward Lebanon. So in other words, people were coming from all over the place. He was attracting huge crowds, so huge that he was concerned that he might be crushed by them. That's why he wanted the disciples to have a boat ready, just in case it got to be too much. So you can appreciate on the practical level what was going on here, big crowds of people. It's an indication of, or you could say a prefiguration of what he came to do. He came to gather all the nations. He came to unite everybody, in fact, the whole world, with God. So yes, it's fitting that he attracted a lot of people. Now, a lot of the people were there just because they wanted to be healed. They weren't necessarily focused on being reunited with God or repenting of their sins, but at least as a starting point, meaning this man is able to heal, so let's go meet him, touch him. So that part is, as I said, a kind of overview of what was going on during this early stage of Jesus' public ministry. But the other part of it that comes out in this gospel is his continuous conflict with the realm of evil spirits. So we're leaving to the side his conflicts with the Pharisees, but we're not leaving to the side his conflict with evil spirits or unclean spirits. It says here that whenever they saw him, they would fall down before him and shout, "You are the Son of God." Now, that actually sounds pretty good to us, to fall down before the Lord and acclaim him as the Son of God. But that's not what was happening, I don't think. I mean, certainly they were not worshiping him. They were not freely giving honor to him. They were opposed to him, and they were opposed to his kingdom. They were threatened by him. So what is this, falling down and shouting, "You are the Son of God"? Well, it seems that they were trying to label him, trying to box him in, trying to expose him, or in some way take power over him or manipulate what was going on. They were trying to interfere. So it doesn't sound like it to us, but that's what evil spirits do, right? They divide, they deceive, they manipulate, and then they try to take control. His response to that is, he warned them sternly not to make him known. It sounds ironic to us because, of course, he wants to be known, because he wants the Father to be known. But he doesn't want to be under the the realm of the evil spirits. He doesn't want the unclean spirits to be the ones to announce the gospel, because they're going to twist it, right? They're going to distort it. So they're not reliable agents or witnesses of the gospel. So just be quiet, he says to them. Let my disciples be the ones who proclaim the coming of the kingdom. And I think it's even in tomorrow's gospel, right? He chooses the 12. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the next thing that happens. He doesn't want evil spirits to be serving him. He wants the disciples, the 12 apostles, to serve him. So that's what's happening in the gospel. Now, we have in the first reading a great example of a humble servant of the kingdom this is Old Testament now, so this is long before Jesus, but this is the period of time when Saul is still the king, but he's already been rejected. David is not the king, but he has already been anointed by Samuel. So it's a kind of transition period. And one of the stars of this period is Saul's son, Jonathan. Beautiful man. Extraordinarily humble man. In our series of studying the virtues, which actually concludes this afternoon, the last one we're going to cover is the virtue of humility. So I've been reading Pope Francis's thoughts about humility the last couple of days. And when I got to this reading today, I said, oh, here's a great example of humility, Jonathan. Humility is not putting yourself down. Humility is acknowledging the whole truth without concern for oneself, because God takes care of us. Humility is essential to relationship with God and to submission to God. So here's Jonathan, you could say, caught in the middle between his father and his friend. His father is Saul, his friend is David. Why is he caught in the middle? Because Saul has got into his head that David is his enemy. It's not true, but that's how we can distort reality when we fall into resentment or we fall into jealousy. Saul is triggered by this song that the women are singing. Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. It's just a song. It's just a... It's almost trivial. But for Saul, it's not. Saul takes it literally. Saul takes it seriously. He doesn't join in the rejoicing, which everybody else is doing. After all, they just won a great victory, and it was because of David. Instead of being happy and rejoicing and thanking David, he gets overcome with jealousy. Jealousy is like this, by the way. Jealousy so distorts our perception that we think that good things are bad things, that we think that good people are bad people, and we think that their achievements or their status has something to do with us when it doesn't. That's how twisted jealousy can be. So here's Saul. He grows jealous of David. In fact, violently jealous. He wants to kill David. It's kind of like mental illness. Now, there's something wrong with Saul at this stage. To see things so inaccurately. Here's David risking his life to defend the Israelites, in fact, to defend the honor of Saul, and here's Saul thinking he's his enemy. A complete distortion, reversal of the truth. Anyway, so that's the situation. Saul is jealous of David, wants to kill him. Jonathan picks up on it, and what does he do? He, as I say, this is an example of humility. He simply speaks the truth. He simply presents the truth to both David and to Saul. He tells David, look, my father's trying to kill you. You better be careful until we sort this thing out. So he takes David's side by speaking the truth to David. Lay low for a while until we can sort this out. But then he also speaks the truth to his father. He takes his father's side too, because he's not taking his own side. He's not defending his own place in the kingdom. And you could imagine, he's the son of a king. He's the first choice to be the next king. So he would have every reason to oppose David along with his father if he was living on a natural level. But he's a humble man, and he recognizes what God is doing. So this is what he does. He speaks to his father, Saul, and he says, look, don't sin by turning against your servant. He's helped you, and the Lord brought about a great victory through him. So recognize what God has done and what place this man David has in the plan of God. Don't bring sin upon yourself by opposing what God is doing. It's a good argument. It's a pretty daring argument to make against a man or to a father who, first of all, he's the son, and What right does he have to correct his father? And what right does he have to oppose his father or disagree with him? But it's a humble and courageous act of love for both David and Saul. And in this case, it works. Now, we know later on, Saul falls back into his jealousy and his violence. But in this reading, it works. And the credit goes to Jonathan. So Jonathan is the example set before us now of someone who is humble enough to have his eyes open to what God is up to, who's not so concerned about defending himself or promoting himself. He can be objective. And that's a great lesson for us. Our nature is always going to be leaning towards self-centeredness. We have tendencies toward jealousy. We have tendencies toward distortion of the truth. But if we can humble ourselves and open ourselves to God, to his word, to his truth, then we can be at service of the kingdom. We can help even those who seem to be opposed to us. We can speak the truth with love, which is a very great service to anyone. So Jonathan is an example for us, and we continue our journey with a pursuit of humble, faithful love.